Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest-running podcast, now in our 15th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we feature a discussion with Marty Small, the mayor of Atlantic City, on his first year in office and his vision for the city while it is still under the control of state government. The GGB Podcast is brought to you by FSB, the industry's leading sports betting solutions and technology platform. For more information, visit fsbtech.com. Small has been mayor of Atlantic City for almost 1 year when he was selected by city council to fill a vacancy created when the previous mayor, Frank Gilliam, resigned after being convicted of corruption while in office. Small won the Democrat nomination for mayor in the primary and now faces a nominal Republican opponent in November's general election. During his term, he has worked with city council to keep property taxes down, grappled with the COVID-19 shutdown, and dealt with the BLM protests, where he has kept the city violence-free after the first unfortunate incident in May. He spoke with me in the mayor's conference room at Atlantic City's City Hall in September. Mayor Marty Small, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. It's great to see you here in Atlantic City. I have to say you've done a great job in the time you've been here. I've been impressed with some of the things you've done. But, you know, it's been about a year now since you've been mayor?
Almost a year.
Okay.
It's coming up on October 3rd.
Okay.
It's been a year, a little over 11 months, and I would like to thank you for the opportunity and to your listening audience. It's a great day here in the city of Atlantic
City.
Yes.
So, it's only been a year, but a lot has happened in that year. So, what's your takeaway, from your time as mayor here?
Well, as I tell everyone, my life experiences have prepared me for this moment. When you look at, coming in office on the heels of the former mayor going out in a federal investigation, when you talk about COVID-19, when you talk about the things that we had to deal with in the mix of everything else, I think we're sitting in a pretty good position. The city of Atlantic City didn't get this way overnight, and it's not going to change overnight. But we made a lot of progress. We came in and changed the climate and culture in the building. We've done some things. It's funny that, I come to the NBCA where in front of 1,200 people, I gave my State of the City address. And all my robust plans and the things that we want to do, which, we've accomplished over 80% of them. But the biggest thing that got the standing ovation was casino related.
Mm-hmm.
When we put the slide up there that my goal was to demo Trump Taj Mahal.
Right.
And ironically, it will be almost to the day, a year, when I said that.
Right.
So that's coming down, the old Trump Plaza, that's coming down.
Right.
they're working on it now, tearing out the guts of the building, doing all that, and it's scheduled to be imploded on January 29th. And I got all these people that follow me on Twitter saying, Mayor, can you move the date up to the 20th? I'm like, look, we're going to let the process play out.
Right, exactly. No question about that. So as much as you've accomplished during this year, the state is still in control of most aspects of the city, especially the financial aspects. How difficult it is to run the city under those restrictions?
No, I mean, honestly, it's not difficult at all.
Mm-hmm.
The state is letting me be Mayor Small.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, with the amount of money the state has invested, there is oversight, and it's a true partnership.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like before where, they make all the decisions and they respect the fact that we have a constituency to answer to, and it's been great. Lieutenant Governor Sheila Oliver, who is, over Atlantic City as the Department of Community Affairs Commissioner, and, she sends high-level people down here. Melanie Walters, the Director of Local Governmental Services, Rob Long is involved, and Kimberly Holmes, who is the Lieutenant Governor's Chief of Staff.
Okay.
We are in touch with the front office as well, the governor, and they've been very supportive. Just like in anything, any relationship, you don't get everything you want.
Sure.
And that's to be expected, but they've embraced my vision.
Mm-hmm.
They embraced the direction that I want to take the city in, and we're going to start to see the fruits of our labor. And with COVID kind of slowed everything down, there's some initiatives that we wanted to do, but due to the way the world is right now, we couldn't do it. But I'm extremely optimistic in the direction that we're taking this city. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all across the city, from Maine to Jackson and every neighborhood in between, people have, you know, gave us kudos for the job that we're doing.
Okay. So there was a point, however, when the state was calling the shots, when they were forcing the city to borrow money to balance the budget and things of that nature, and consequently the city's in a great amount of debt. Does that continue to happen, or are you really?
No, the last bond issue, which was needed, and you know, you have your political detractors, political opportunists to say, well, why is the city borrowing? I asked them a question. Mm-hmm. What is your plan to pay back the pension and health benefits?
Right.
The state said that the city had to pay. Mm-hmm. It was an agreement that the city made, and we bonded the money.
Right.
And that saved us from having a tax increase. So you can't have it both ways. And the city currently, as of this conversation, is about $556 million in debt. If we do nothing, if we fail to get creative, or you know, an influx of money comes through to pay down the debt, mm-hmm. or something special happens, the city will be debt free in 2043.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people have to understand. Yes, the lower the debt service on the budget, the you know, the better you know the taxes are, and
right.
we'll start to see that decrease shortly. But I'm optimistic that we'll be able to get out of this hole. With everyone working together, and like I said, it's just an exciting time.
Okay.
It's a great day here in the city of Atlantic City.
Okay. Well, you mentioned taxes. I'm a homeowner in Atlantic City, so I've seen my taxes increase substantially
yes.
over the last 5 years. You know, the casinos signed this pilot program payment in lieu of taxes, which kind of shifted the burden to the homeowners and the small businesses. And then, you know, with the instability of tax rates, it's very hard to attract developers to Atlantic City. Is there something that can be done, you know, to bring those developers in?
Well, I'm going to just tell people to look at my last 5 years track record,
mm-hmm.
and you know, they can look it up. I was the city council president for 4 years and the revenue and finance chair for the city.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough now because of the reval,
right?
But in spite of it all, the reval, the pilot, and everything else, this city is on strong fiscal ground. I remember in 2016 when the state takeover was looming, you know, there was points where we projected the city to run out of money. And I remember Chris Christie saying, well, mm-hmm. I'm going to let him run out of money,
yeah.
you know, and I don't want to be the mayor of Atlantic City, but if I have to be the mayor, I will. But back to the finances, the five budgets, four as city council president and now as mayor, we produced three flat budgets on the city side, which we can control.
Mm-hmm.
And two tax decreases, and we had a 5.5% tax decrease just recently. I know a lot of people say, oh, they said it was a tax decrease, but people have to remember the city, even though we approved the budget,
mm-hmm.
there's still another step,
right.
and the local finance board approved it, so people should see that relief in their fourth quarter tax bill.
Right. Well, last year, you know, you continued to reduce the taxes last year, but then the school board came in and raised the taxes.
The county. But that's the thing, and the lieutenant governor tasked me with that, to create a better working relationship with the county. I already have one at the school district. I was a former board member, you know, former employee. And I mean, I've lived here my whole life. So, and, you know, we're working on that to communicate, because there's no way that disaster should have happened. You know, people should have just been talking to each other and,
mm-hmm.
you know, figuring out a way. And, you know, the residents, you know, at times don't want to hear that, oh, it was the school district, it was the county.
Right.
Even though it was, they only know where they pay their taxes
exactly,
to.
Right.
So it's like,
right.
well, I'm going to City Hall, I'm upset at this,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, here's what it is. But I would just say, look at my track record, and we are projected to have a tax decrease for the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always one to understand that it takes more revenue. That's why I started to think outside the box, and I'm highly offended, because I gave up the idea to increase the tolls at Pleasantville Plaza to $1.50,
right.
with 75 cents coming back to the taxpayers of Atlantic City.
Mm-hmm.
It was a bad idea then,
yeah.
but now when they needed to do it, it's
sure.
a great idea.
Yeah.
And I just think that's offensive. I think at the end of the day, boards do what they want to do, and you know, it's up to us, because with the lack of casino parking, with the lack of luxury tax, with the lack of hotel tax, only thing we have is taxpayer revenue. Mm-hmm. And we found out that in the law, for the medical marijuana, the city is to get like 2% of its proceeds. So don't know what those numbers will be. And I know marijuana is on the horizon if it passes. And thinking of revenue streams, morally, I'm against it. I never smoked anything a day in my life, let alone marijuana. And my take is, if it's going to cause an extra burden, and if we're not going to get anything out of it,
right,
we don't want it. Mm-hmm. And that's the municipality's right. So if the price is right, so to speak, from the tax standpoint, and we get that revenue stream, and we can start offsetting our taxpayers with the budget, you know, that's a discussion we'll have. We'll be for it. Okay. But
well, another way that you can offset the taxpayers who are existing already is to bring more development in town. Is there plans to fill in some of these vacant lots on the boardwalk?
Yes.
And things of that nature?
I believe not for COVID. You would have seen, and I can't say who, but you would have seen an announcement from CRDA and myself of a major housing developer doing something around Ocean on those vacant lots.
Okay.
Obviously, those discussions are going to pick back up as the world opens back up, but we were extremely optimistic. I know that development is the key. I'm working with CRDA on a program as well. We need to attract more professionals here. We need to bring the middle class back, because listen, I've been a champion for affordable housing. Look at the ward I used to represent. Every major development was fixed at no additional increase to the tenants. So we brought Mo Vaughn here, former Boston Red Sox all-star. They redid Carver Hall, put a lot of money into it, beautified it, 250 cameras directly to the Atlantic City Police Department. And I'm leveraging my relationships in the entertainment community, or just people I know in development, and selling Atlantic City, because that's my job. I'm the number one promoter for the city of Atlantic City to get people here. And there are a lot of people interested. We just got to start executing deals now.
Okay, great. So let's talk about the CRDA. You know, as mayor, you have a board seat on the CRDA.
Yes.
In the past, however, the CRDA hasn't really done what seems to have been best for Atlantic City. You know, spent a lot of money on this little park that where the sands used to be and those kind of things.
The famous, I think I coined the term, the art park.
Right, exactly. And the casinos sometimes aren't happy with the acts they bring in to play on the beach, things like that. Is there ways to get the CRDA to really pay more attention to really what Atlantic City needs rather than what they think it needs?
Yeah, well, I think it's a new day. Not only is it a great day in the city of Atlantic City, I think it's a new day at CRDA. I mean, Iran, but Matt Daugherty, for the city of Atlantic City, has been the best executive director at CRDA.
Okay.
He gets it. He's a former mayor.
Mm-hmm.
You see a shift in their priorities. They're helping the city out with policing, any and everything that we need, resources. The CRDA has been there, focusing in on priorities that they never would have thought of. Like, we're in discussions with them for building on Kentucky and Arctic, naming it KY and the Curb, putting a museum there, possibly Atlantic City Arts Foundation, African American Chamber of Commerce, and on the second floor, we're talking about building a state-of-the-art recording studio for our young people, as well as a state-of-the-art video suite and photography suite, so that way after school, the kids will have somewhere to have structure and everything. So they more than stepped to the plate. When you talk about the amount of money that they put in during the pandemic to feed the good people of Atlantic City, it's astronomical, over $1 million, and they've shown that commitment. They've demonstrated that commitment. It's not us versus them. It's, hey, mayor, what do you think about this? And, you know, as a board member, I can appreciate that. And I'm an active board member. I just don't think over the years, maybe some of the mayors didn't have the vision or, you know, things and stuff. So when you go to them with an ask, you know, have a plan.
Right.
And that's what we came in this office with the plan.
Okay. So, right after your term started, there was this change of government effort led by a casino owner and Local 54. It failed pretty miserably, but they had some good ideas there, I thought. I mean, do you think the structure of government in Atlantic City could be altered a little bit just to make it more efficient?
Well, the ironic thing is, when I proposed the change of government, mm-hmm. you know, people claim politics because they said, I was trying to knock out somebody who was running for mayor. And
right.
I said, listen, if you know what you're talking about, that would be impossible because at the time, Frank Gilliam was an at-large councilman.
Right.
And an at-large councilman runs at the same time as a mayor.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't knocking anybody out and interrupting anyone's
right.
term. I had proposed 6 ward seats and 1 at-large for mm-hmm. voting purposes.
Sure.
And it would have saved the city $480,000, but
right.
you know, no one had the appetite politically to do it. But the government that they proposed was a pure dictatorship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Look at the town. So let me understand this correctly. They said they wanted to go to a 5-member
right.
council, all at large.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said to the people, technically, all 5 people can live in a house in the first ward and
right.
run the government.
Right.
Same thing at the 6th ward, at
mm-hmm.
the other end of the town. And the idea that, you know, we need a professional manager is a smack in the face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have great professionals here. At the end of the day, as mayor, you surround yourself with the people that is going to carry out the vision. And, you know, no one knows it all. But to say that we're going to have a municipal manager
right.
that they're going to live at least 100 miles away
mm-hmm.
and make all a decision. That person, as a resident, that person, you know, if you need them, you know where they at.
Right.
You know, like, to say that is offensive, that someone that lives 100 miles away is going to correct the city of Atlantic City. That person wouldn't be accountable to you
mm-hmm.
or me.
Sure.
So that's what it was. And listen, like I said, is government perfect?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely not. If it was perfect, no one would complain. But, and I'm not here to point the finger at anyone, but collectively, anyone who has ever sat in the mayor's seat or any of the council seats, collectively as a whole, through the years, we've all been the problem.
Right.
But it's not perfect, but it's going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy that the direction that we're headed in.
Right. So where do you stand on the deed restriction issue with these ex-casinos that are now prohibited from being developed into new casinos? Is that something you think would help the city or harm it?
I think we're in a good place right now.
Mm-hmm.
I say we get our house in order
mm-hmm.
with the 9 that we have.
Right.
Understanding that competition is on the horizon. I know a lot of people point to potentially in New York. I'm more nervous about Philadelphia.
Right.
They're building a nice casino right at the sports complex.
It looks nice, yeah.
Where the old Holiday Inn was
right.
on, you know, Packer Avenue and Philly Live. I mean, that's going to be a real threat. So I think we're at a good place right now. I wouldn't favor any expansion right now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe down the line, years, once, you know, we get things together. And we have to understand as a city, we can't just survive on casino gaming anymore.
Right.
We have to diversify our offerings.
Sure, no question.
And when you look at the potential, just forget Atlantic City.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about any city. When does oceanfront center city ever become available?
Right, sure.
So now we're going to have an opportunity when Trump Plaza is demolished. And the same energy, effort, and aggressiveness that we went to tear that building down, we're going to work with Carl Icahn and them to get the right development. We got one chance to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had it my way, it would be some type of family entertainment, which we sorely lack. You see Bart Blatstein announce that they're going to build a $100 million water park. We need things like that to draw families.
Sure, absolutely. So, again, in the midst of your first term here, COVID hits. How did the city respond to that?
I think we did excellent,
mm-hmm.
honestly, and it's not over because all
sure.
the health experts unanimously say that the fall and winter version will be worse.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that my administration was proactive. We came out. We were the only one in the region to call for testing. Mm-hmm. We wanted the federal government to do it. That couldn't happen. We wanted the state government to do it. That couldn't happen. And when we had the opportunity and we got the funding, I put my money where my mouth is. I said we were going to have testing at Betterfield. We had testing at Betterfield. Not only did we have one testing site, we had two. Mm-hmm. We had a walk-up at Showboat parking lot,
right,
and the drive-through at Betterfield. And to sit here today and our numbers haven't even hit 500, mm-hmm, and you know that's 500 too many.
Sure.
But compared to the rest of the state, mm-hmm, with Atlantic City being a worldwide destination,
right,
I'm satisfied where we are as far as the response. You know, we got aggressive thanks to Senator Booker, and we had an hour and 13 minute conversation, and I just said, look, you know, we need help. This is something that we couldn't prepare for. As I often stated, if there's a hurricane or a nor'easter,
right,
there's a blueprint for that.
Right.
If there's a blizzard coming and a snow removal process, there's a blueprint for that. If it's time to evacuate the island, yep, there's a blueprint for that. There was nothing. I mean, we all lived this together.
Sure.
And as I told people, you know, tough times don't last. Tough people do, and they shall pass. And that's the city of Atlantic City's makeup. When you talk about, in addition to the testing, for us to feed 3,780 senior citizens two hot meals per week, mm-hmm, you know, that was a blessing. And the reason why, the vision was that the senior population was the most susceptible to the virus.
Right.
And my administration stepped up in a major way.
Yeah.
FSB is more than just a platform. With more than 100,000 live sporting events traded by FSB teams each year, FSB has the experience to help you launch the most exciting U.S. sports betting operation. Built by experts with years of experience and powering some of the world's most successful brands, the FSB platform has been created to put you in charge of your business. FSB helps by creating online and retail solutions that are supported by an incredibly strong mobile offering with marketing, trading, payments, and all the other tools required to support a world-leading sports book. The FSB team is good, but their technology is great. And now back to our podcast.
So how has the city been performing since the casinos have reopened? Looks like they had a pretty good last month.
I tell you what. When you look at the overall picture of the whole COVID, no one knew what to expect, what casinos would look like, you know, upon opening. But we set the tone. A lot of municipalities near and far shut that boardwalk down.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was extremely important to keep eyes open,
sure,
because the governor said, stay at home. I encourage everybody to stay at home. But it was a comma in that.
Right.
He said, however, I encourage people to get out, ride their bikes, take a jog, mm-hmm, do some type of exercise. What better place for peace of mind than Atlantic City Boardwalk?
That's for sure. Yeah.
And I've got a lot of kudos for that, and it's like, oh, well, this town closed. Listen,
right,
I'm not going to govern on feelings and emotions. I'm going to go by the data.
Mm-hmm.
The police said they didn't see anything wrong. For the most part, everyone was socially distancing on the boardwalk. And more important than physical health is mental health.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people that are used to doing things 12 hours a day are now in the house.
Right.
That could take a mental toll on people.
Yeah.
So that was a good decision. And what I've noticed is the boardwalk stayed packed, but more importantly now when the casinos and other hotels open, everybody was in Atlantic City.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sometimes the gift and the curse.
Right.
Maybe we got some people who would not normally be here,
mm-hmm,
but due to the circumstance, but the town was packed, all the hotels were sold out. I mean, the casino numbers are gonna be what they be considering that.
Right. Sure.
It's 25%, but it's important that, you know, we do as much as we can to try to maintain some sort of momentum heading into 2021, because that's going to be a crucial year for the city, entertainment-wise, everything else. Because now I had a college classmate that's coming to town this weekend and staying at Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, what's going on this weekend, you know, let me know. I said, are you talking about food-wise? They said, no, I'm thinking a little entertainment. I said, nothing's
right.
open.
Yeah.
No clubs,
yeah,
you know, anything. And people have to realize when you think of a casino, you only, for the most part, you think of the tables and the slot machines.
Right.
But a lot of those casinos make their money on entertainment.
Sure, right.
And food and beverage, mm-hmm. which, you know, because of the delay in opening up. But like I said, we got to continue to be safe. And, you know, like I said, I'm very optimistic about 2021.
Okay, great. So you mentioned that there some people, you know, we don't really want here in Atlantic City have shown up. And I've heard a lot of comments that people didn't feel safe on the boardwalk, especially in the evening during the summer. Is that something that that you're paying attention to? And that
Yes. I'm definitely paying attention to. One of the things that we came out the gate swinging with is we came in and cleaned up Atlantic Avenue. And due to COVID, the way the police interacted with people, that kind of slowed things down. And, you know, we are about to put, you know, full-time patrols on Atlantic Avenue again. Mm-hmm. The problem is, and I call it Greyhound therapy, municipalities near and far send their people here who are down and out, go to Atlantic City, here's a one-way bus ticket, figure it out.
Right.
And that's not fair to us. Sure. It's not fair to the taxpayers. You know, you look on Atlantic Avenue, you see pockets where, you know, homeless are starting to, mm-hmm. you know, appear. And that's not the image that we want. Listen, at the end of the day, we're all God's children. I'm sure every family has people who are down out mm-hmm. on luck. But, you know, it's our responsibility, and it's just not fair. And if you look at what happened during COVID, I made the decision. I said that we're going to move, you know, all the homeless people to hotels out on the Pike and everywhere else in neighboring cities. What did they do? They ran and put up executive orders to say, oh, no, we're not allowing Atlantic City homeless. These are not Atlantic City homeless. Right. Like, mm-hmm. let's be for real.
Sure.
It's a problem. And, you know, quite frankly, it's something that, you know, we're working on a major plan. And at such time, those details will be released, but it's not fair, and it's not Atlantic City homeless.
Yeah, no question. So we also encountered the BLM problem. You know, certainly peaceful protests are acceptable, and they, you know, that was the goal, I think, of the first one in Atlantic City. But it got out of control. Some violence in the Tanger Outlet Mall there, and then you were front and center there, and you're saying this is not the way Atlantic City is. And then I think what you did for the threat to really protest on the boardwalk and then write things on the boardwalk, I think that was a stroke of genius where you brought it down to MLK and wrote on the street there, which was a great community event. So
yes it was.
And how did you approach all this?
Listen, it was a proactive approach. You know, I'm a black man, mm-hmm. And the things that throughout time that African Americans unfortunately had to encounter with police, it's not a good look.
Right.
And you know, we know that all police officers aren't bad. You can't paint everybody with the same brush and take police out of the equation. Every business or organization has bad apples in a bunch.
Sure.
So what we wanted to do was to do something, not just a symbolic measure, but something that, you know, would last. Unfortunately, Memorial Day weekend, and we believe in a right to peaceful protest.
Sure, absolutely.
I marched in the protest. Mm-hmm. I marched on the 4th of July when I had stumped my toe early that morning, so I rode alongside. So we support that right. But when you see people coming in here, destroying your city, destroying the business district, I mean, it went right through me. Mm-hmm. I did a Facebook Live, and see, one of the things with me, I'm not always politically correct.
Right.
I'm a tell it like it is person. I wear my, you know, emotions on my sleeve at times.
Right.
And that night, I wasn't happy, and you know, but the next day I challenged the community for that particular mm-hmm. event, and over 200 volunteers near and far came in and helped, you know, put the walk back together again. But that day it was just devastated. I remember I had did a radio interview, it was with Harry Hurley, and it was like a live interview, mm-hmm. and my feelings were all over the place because I was at the site standing in front of Timberland. And I remember saying to some of the young people I knew, and out of respect, like, I may be married small to many, but to a lot, I'm Mr. Marty. And that's the name I had when I was running the Boys and Girls Club.
Sure, right.
And running the after school programs here at the Atlantic City Public Schools. And I would just give a look, and they would drop the stuff. And a couple of people I saw afterwards, I said, like, you don't understand. You may think you're getting away with this now, but this whole area is under surveillance in the stores and out around. And that played out. 200 people were arrested. Then you come back on the 4th of July weekend with casinos up, you know, open for 2 days, and Steve Young wants to shut the city down, so to speak.
Right.
So we had to deal with that. They were arrested. It was no violence, but the trickle-down effect, I mean, I can't tell you the amount of calls that this office got.
Right.
Is it safe to come to Atlantic City? Mm-hmm. Casino said people were canceling their reservation in fear of violence. And that's not what we want to project. I mean, 2 days that the casinos are open, you know, we all have family that work in the casinos, friends. Like, what about them? And like I said at that time, this is not about George Floyd or Black Lives Matter. It was about Steve Young. So now fast forward the third holiday weekend in a row, we wanted to do it. You know, we told them in uncertain terms that, you know, would the boardwalk be painted? And, you know, the city in the process was working on their event and the location on Dr. Martin Luther King Boulevard in front of the Civil Rights Garden. I just thought that that was the better place. And I believe that we alleviated a disastrous situation on the boardwalk with indoor dining opening, you know, that day. So I'm happy. But as I stated, you know, we could paint Black Lives Matter and leave it there. What is the message?
Right.
And the shirt that I wore that day, on the front said Black Lives Matter, but on the back said All Lives Matter, because in order for all lives to matter, Black lives has to matter. And I told people, I proclaimed it, did a proclamation that starting in 2021, we're going to gather there every Labor Day weekend on a Friday, and we will kick, that would be the kickoff. But in the month of September, it will be known as Black Lives Matter Month in the great city of Atlantic City. And, you know, it's a situation where, you know, we turned the potential negative into a positive event that received a worldwide coverage, you know, about what we've done. And I'm proud of my record with the protest, because if you look at a lot of major cities around the country, it's been worse. We had one, we had a bad few hours, and it hasn't happened since. And I hope the message is crystal clear that it won't be tolerated. And lastly, about that subject, the city of Atlantic City, Mayor Small, is not associated with the group Black Lives Matter or any Black Lives Matter group. They support defunding the police. I support increasing the police for a safer community. So it's about the message, it's not about the organization.
I appreciate all the time you give me. I just got a couple of other questions. When I was doing research for this interview, I talked to a lot of people, and two names kept coming up pretty frequently. One was former Mayor Jim Whalen, and also Omar Anderson, probably the unofficial mayor of Atlanta.
Yes, of
the North Side, anyway. What have those two men meant to your career?
I mean, Jim Whalen and Omar Anderson, you know, meant the world to me. Jim Whalen took an interest in us at an early age. Though I didn't go to MLK where he was a swim teacher, I went to New Jersey Avenue School, but he took an interest in the youth and basically followed us through high school, through college, and it was beyond a political relationship. You know, some people, you know, just say, okay, well, I'm gonna take interest in these kids and, you know, that's that, and I'm out of office. You know, Mr. Whalen came to my wedding, you know, the birth of my kids. I remember when I was in Stockton, our senior year, we were going to California to play in the Christmas tournament, and we were leaving December 26th in the wee hours of the morning. So I remember sitting downstairs in my living room, and that green Jeep pulls up and, you know, gave me a check for spending money. Just little things like that, just always been a resource. And he's my political mentor. And, you know, just as in any relationship, there were disagreements. You know, at the time, I didn't like the way the state takeover was going. And, you know, we kind of butt heads. And But he was my guy. And I'm never going to forget this. And it was in that office. It looks a lot different now. It was in that office. It was December of 1999. I was, he hired me as a caseworker in 1998 for the city. And then from there, I went to run a program. It was called the Community Police Partnership Grant, the Safe Haven Program. It was a partnership between the Atlantic City Police Department, the New Jersey Department of Law and Public Safety and the City of Atlantic City's Health and Human Service Department. And my job at the time was to run quality of life activities for youth and seniors in between New Jersey and Tennessee Avenue, because all the studies showed that that was the worst part of the city. So we did senior citizens arts and crafts. We had an all sports camp, excuse me, for boys, and we had a camp for girls called Precious Jewels. And at the time, the new Boys and Girls Club was under construction, and they had reached out and they wanted to interview me. I was happy as ever at my job with the city. Wasn't making a whole lot of money, and I interviewed for the job at the Boys and Girls Club for youth program manager, and they made me an offer. It was about $5,000 more than I was making for the city. So I went up there. I was torn. I was like, I got a chance to go back home, Boys and Girls Club. Like, you couldn't make that up, because every director that's been there said, one day, Marty, you're going to come back and run this place. Yeah. And that was an opportunity, like, to go back home. But at the same time, I was loving what I was doing with the city. And him and I sat in that office with Miss Kitty Johnson, rest her soul. And we had a conversation. I said, Boys and Girls Club made me the offer. You know, I'm really considering it, but I like what I'm doing here. He said, first of all, let me just say this. As mayor of Atlantic City, I don't want Marty Small to leave, because the job that you're doing with these kids is making me look good. But as a friend of Marty Small, someone who knows that he has political aspirations, you got to take that job. He said, working here with the city, you can't run for office. He's like, this gives you the flexibility to run for office and do whatever you need. He's like, and it's an opportunity that you can't pass up. That was telling, because that wasn't a political opportunist, that was a friend. Omar Anderson, I mean, I just miss Omar immensely. I still go to the barbershop, his brother Ab cuts my hair. Omar was always the life of the party. And I remember at his funeral, when I was talking about him, he loved the city so much. And when he had a seasonal job with the city working in public works, he rode on the back of that trash truck with joy. And he used to always say, I said, Omar, how you do it? And he used to just lean back and smile on the back of the trash truck. But he was a community giant. Everyone loved Omar. You know, he was a diehard Philadelphia sports fan. And, you know, like I said, I just miss him.
Yeah, no question. All right, one more question. So you're running for re-election in November. I think you'll succeed there. I think people are behind you for sure. So what's your vision for the future of Atlantic City?
Well, you know, we did big item approach, clean and safe, you know, stronger code enforcement, taxes, you know, enhanced youth and senior programs. But what I did is I came in and I broke the city down department by department and presented a vision for each department. And we've been checking off the boxes. Like, when you talk about something as our appearance, the city's website. The city's website is now available in every different language. Mm-hmm. It's upgraded, and we did the soft opening, and once everything is complete, you know, we're gonna unleash it to the world. It's a major difference. When you talk about issues that hasn't happened in a long time, we didn't have a health officer. We hired a health officer. We hired a health and human services director to bring programs and services back to the city of Atlantic City. And we just talk about governing in general. Outside my office, and I'll show you when we've done this interview, it's my leadership theme. And it's called Let's Ace It. And it's an acronym-based theme, but LET stands for Leadership, Expectations, Transparency, and Stability. ACE stands for Accountability, Credibility, and Excellence in Execution. We can have all the plans in the world, but you don't have the ability to execute them. It's no good.
Yeah.
As I say, in sports, being a former basketball player, everyone looks good in the layup line, but what you going to do when you have defense? So that's the elements that we came in with to do it. You know, we made a lot of changes. You know, we've hit a lot of our goals in the pandemic, and I'm just excited to see what we'll do without those restrictions. And just to the way that people answer the phones now. Mm-hmm. When you pick up the phone in City Hall, that's one of the things we heard about. People in City Hall are ignorant and in person and even more on the phone. Now when you call, no matter how upset you are about your taxes, I'm sure you'll feel a little, hey, this is different. It's a great day here in the city of Atlantic City. Mm-hmm. Mayor's office, Mayor Small speaking, how may I help you? The little things, you know, we're working on. And as I stated, we didn't get in this position overnight. And, you know, I tell the people of the great city of Atlantic City, please be patient with me. God ain't through with me yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mayor, thanks for the time. I appreciate it. And good luck as a resident. I hope you succeed.
Yes.
You know, this is a great city, and you know, we need somebody with a strong will and a vision to lead it.
Yes, and I have both.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Enjoyed this week's podcast brought to you by FSB, the industry's leading sports betting solutions and technology platform. For more information, visit fsbtech.com. To learn more about the future of Atlantic City as it struggles to recover, visit ggbmagazine.com. To get all the news of the gaming industry, particularly of the coronavirus situation and its impact on gaming, including daily updates, subscribe for free at ggbnews.com by using the code GGB180. So don't miss a single episode of the GGB Podcast. Subscribe on iTunes and Spotify today. And we'll see you next week on the GGB Podcast. But since you came around, all I see is tomorrow.